Thank you. I've been trying to learn how to use this thing for 3 weeks. Terry, what am I doing wrong? Oh, yes. When the machines finally take over the world, I'm going to be the only one around here sitting around saying, "I told you so." I don't know why I'm so resistant to this type of thing. Ah, yes. This is a class on how to keep fear from scaring you to death. Fear, as perhaps you know in your own world, can make you make decisions that can literally destroy you. And we're not admonished in the Bible to not be scared. But we are coached on what to be scared of and what not to be scared of. And I'm convinced that an utter submission to God creates the mindset to where we're scared of the right things and we're not scared of the wrong things. Last week, a friend of mine told me that I left everybody with the impression that I was fixing to lose everything in our family. And it came because I was talking about my grandson, little old Joshua Daniel. Oh, I wish he is here. I sure want you to meet him. Where is he? He's in class. Boy, I was wanting him to meet everybody. Well, okay. Thank you. Well, he's superior in every way, so we have to. I was eating lunch with Joshua Daniel. Well, I was eating lunch with my son and Carly, who's Joshua's sister also, but Joshua, I call him old JD. He was sitting beside me, and so I had the most interaction with him. And I was going to have a meeting with somebody whom I thought, depending on what they said in our meeting in an hour, had made all the difference on whether I go broke or not. And my point was that Joshua didn't care. It didn't matter to him whether molasses went to $1 a sop. It didn't make a bit of difference to him. All he is interested in was, "Hey, boy, come here." All he is interested in was, "Pop, do this. Pop, do that. Come here, old buddy. I want to show you to everybody. Hey, how are you? You doing good? Hey, well, you want your daddy, don't you? Well, can you say hi to everybody?" "No." "Nope, he can't." "Well, this is unfair to him to put him in front of everybody. But this is old JD just to put a face with a name." And so what we were doing at the restaurant was he was asking for a chip, and he would say, "Pop, bounce me on your knee. Pop, I want to sit in your lap. Pop this, pop that." And he just thought Pop could do everything, and he wasn't worried about a single thing in the world. And I think that's what we're supposed to do with God. I think that, this little old guy, he didn't worry about imposing on me. He didn't worry about whether I thought he was, he didn't care whether he was messy or not. He didn't worry about whether or not I was, he was bothering me. He just kept on asking the same old stuff. You know, "Do it again, Pop. Do it again, Pop." Anyway, and the weird thing about it is I didn't care. I loved it. Yes, ma'am. And the nice thing about it, he looks like his grandpa. Oh, Lord. Well, now, thank you. Both of them. Well, But the thing is that I really didn't care. In fact, it made me plumb happy that that little boy was imposing on my time and on my attention in spite of everything that's going on in my life. I wonder if God's like that. The thing is, if we're made in the image of God, we've got to have some God in us. We've got to have some of the characteristics of God. And there's evidence in the Bible over and over and over that God is like a father. Well, if that's the case, then maybe we're like old J.D. a little bit. And maybe we ask for the wrong stuff. Maybe we ask for it at the wrong time. Maybe we're asking too much and too many times. And I wonder if God gets sick of us. Or does he just grin at us and say, boy, he's mine. That's fine. I think it might be that way. J.D., there's your mom. You want to go see her? No. No? You want to stay with me? Okay. You can do that. I love you, old buddy. Here. Thank you, Cindy, for letting me borrow him. Bye, buddy. See, old J.D. loves me.
We ought to feel like that, too, about God.
If he leaves, yeah. I think it helps a lot, Sam, when we get the right perspective on that. Because I've been going through a strong learning curve lately about fear. And so I wanted to, those of you who care about it at all, I wanted to not leave you hanging on that issue. He said, well, you left us hanging. You never did tell us what happened in your meeting. So are you broke or what? I'm really hesitant. I don't know exactly why, but typically I'm really hesitant to say, okay, God is taking care of me. I don't know what's behind that, but I see it in my life all the time, and I thank him for it all the time, and I give him credit for it over time. But I don't know if it's my introversion or what it is of declaring it in the assembly. Like David in the Psalms, he wasn't shy about that at all. He said, I'll just praise your name in the whole assembly. And what a neat thought that is. And but if I may self-disclose for a moment, and maybe not more than you want to hear, I don't have any idea. Well, I do have an idea. I grew up in Tennessee, and we weren't poor, but we didn't have any money. And my dad was a school teacher, and he was raising five kids, and I begged to milk the cow till I was eight, and then for the next 10 years, I begged not to. And there, you know, you might think that the life living on a small farm is all exciting and happy and all that all the time, and there are some good parts to it, but a lot of what I remember is excruciating boredom. And I'd sit in the back porch. We saw a range of mountains, and they were about 4 miles away, real pretty. Front porch, it was kind of flat, and I looked over. But I remember sitting on the front porch and thinking, man, this horizon is way too close. I got to broaden my horizons. I've got to go. I've got to get. I got to see the world. I got to be somebody. Main thing is I got to be significant. because I was the youngest of five kids, and I was the gopher. I had three brothers, and I was the baby, and my dad didn't teach me anything except how to go get a hammer, or how to go get the boards, or how to go get a nail, or how to go get some fence, or how to go get the cows, or how to go. And he taught the other brothers how to do stuff, or at least that's how it felt to me. But there was something in me, and I don't know where it came from, that made me want to reach way beyond myself, but there's some downsides to that. It'll make you risk to where you might get your head cut off. Well, that's what I've seemed like I've done all my life now, is just risk stuff and reach way on up there beyond myself to where there's no way in the world I can do this. And it's all tied into my faith in God somehow or another, because I think, well, what would I do if I wasn't scared? And what would I do if God really was with me? Would I go to Africa and try to hunt a lion, or what would I do? And so I made these goals for myself, and I've drug my family in on it, and you might ask Lindy whether all that's worked out good or not, but I've reached beyond what I knew I was and way beyond what I actually thought I could be. And as a result, I've experienced some pretty neat stuff. But I've also put myself in big old pickles, you know, of what's going to happen to us now. Well, we sold a cow and a calf and came to Texas. And that's what paid for the U-Haul. That was the only cow and calf I had, actually. But so we started working here in 1990, and across time we did pretty good in the medical management business. And 2 years ago, I knew that our reimbursement was going to get cut by 42%. And I didn't know anybody doing the same thing that we did who made 42% profit. And so I thought, well, we got to do something different. And so we planned on building a little psychiatric, we're in the mental health kind of world, and we planned on building a psychiatric hospital and couldn't find a place to do it. Couldn't find anywhere to buy, couldn't find a place to build. Time was ticking, you know, time was going on, because the cut was going to take effect this January. And so anyway, last June we found a place. So we built it out, spent all our money, and built it out, hoping to have it up and going by January. Well, it was up and going in December. And in the psychiatric hospital world, in order to get paid, if you're private for profit, you typically have to get contracts with insurances and things like that, because there's really not enough private paying people in the world to make a go of it. And usually in order to get contracts with private insurances, you have to get a Medicare provider number. Well, I tried to do that, and so we got accredited by this outfit, and the state had to come in and do two parts of the survey that you have to do after our accreditation. Well, we got accredited in December and waited on the state to come, and state health services, and they didn't come. And I called them and finally found out, well, we're not going to do that this year because we don't have enough hands. We don't have enough surveyors. That's what I'm trying to say. And so we're not going to do any psychiatric hospitals this year. So what you can do is you can get accredited. Well, I already had. Well, it was the wrong outfit. I got accredited by the wrong people. And so we got to get accredited by another outfit called Joint Commission. JCAHO, if you're familiar with that, which we're trying to do. And all that's well and good, except we're out of money. Because in order to get accredited, you have to be open. And in order to be open, you got to be running. In order to be running, you got to have a payroll. And psychiatric hospitals are real expensive. I'm amazed at everything that goes into making one of those things run. Well, we're actually doing two. We're doing one in San Antonio, too. And so you know what I'm talking about by reaching way beyond what you can possibly do? I mean, that's way, way, way beyond what this little 10-year-old kid milking a cow at night and being bored on the farm ever thought about. But it's a big idea, isn't it? It's a possibility thought. Well, that's what turns me on about this stuff, actually, is the bigness. You know, wow, what an idea. Well, except that it might kill you. And so, so since December, I think Lindy can tell you the exact numbers, but I think it's $170,000 a month that you have to spend to make a hospital run. And if you're not bringing in any dimes, you know, 170 here, 170 there, after a while, you know, it kind of adds up. And so we're out of money. And we've borrowed all we could. We've saved all we could. And we've begged all we could and just stopped short of stealing all we could. And so at the end of this month, we're out of money. Well, all right, that's the shape I was in. So we have a place in San Antonio, and we bought a building there. And Logan, my son's over there, and Cindy's husband is over there. And we're trying to do the same thing there, but we didn't have any money to do that either. And it's taking too long to tell this. I'm sorry, but this is actually, okay, I'm not sorry. But we bought that building, and a guy wanted to buy it when we bought it. He said he had it bought the year before for twice what we gave for it, but his renter kind of finked out on him, and so he didn't buy it. So he said, hey, you want to sell the building? We didn't at the time, but we went back to him the other day and said, hey, would you like to buy it? Short answer is he would. And before that, though, we got a loan. We were going to get a loan to build our hospital in San Antonio from a bank, and I got to doing the math, and it was way too little. It's like $1.3 million or something. I thought, that is not enough money. We're fixing to run out of money before we make any money. So I'm going to turn that loan down. So I called the bank up, turned it down. She was all disappointed, but she kind of respected it some way or another, and she said, okay, why don't you just take this $250,000 line of credit then, just based on the homework we've already done on you. Well, so I did. So the $250,000 line of credit put us from February to March. We'd have been out of money 2 months ago. So the guy came, I went back to the guy, said, you want to buy our building? And he said, sure, I'm interested. And so that was the conversation I was going to have with him when I was visiting with JD. That's where I'm getting to with this thing. And so actually at the end of that conversation, we agreed that he would buy that building in San Antonio for us for twice what we gave for it. And then he would pay to build out the hospital within that building that we were going to build it out. And then we'd lease it from him, and he'd give us 18 months free rent, and then we'd lease it from him from then on. Well, that's in my calculations, impossible odds. It's you don't do that. You don't buy something 1 year and sell it for twice. The math doesn't work typically, and typically the life situation doesn't work like that. And so what I think I'm going to have to do is praise God. And so I'm thanking God for that. Now, is that God doing it, or is he setting me up for a great big hit? Is it, you know, when's the other shoe going to fall? You know, is he trapping me, or is that him doing that? Well, that's part of why I'm so worried about saying stuff like that, is because the whole book isn't written yet. Because next week I might come back and say he decided not to, so now I'm dead. Yeah, I always think about stuff like that. But in my life, and this is why I think, guys, that people who've walked with God a long time, Brother Freeman said it very well last week, and I don't remember your exact words, but the message I got from it was, people who've walked with God a long time and been through a whole lot of circumstances believe any more than they did when they were just starting out. And the reason they believe any more is because he's demonstrated himself to be faithful. We trust that we live with a faithful God. Well, so it appears then as if God, I step out into space in my walk, and then God puts a rock there for me to step on. And then I step again, and God puts a rock. It's like, give us this day our daily bread. That's how it feels to me right now. And I don't have the slightest clue what's going to happen to us in a month. Well, that is why I'm so interested in how to learn how to keep fear from scaring me to death. Because a human has a unique ability to project thoughts into the future and pretend as if we know what's going to happen. And then we think that it might be terrible, and it scares us. Well, it might be terrible, really, guys. It really might be. But if Brother Freeman and I are talking together and he says, hey, Nathan, next week let's go on a picnic. And I say, oh, it might rain. Well, what's the truth about next week? Gonna rain or not? We don't know. I'm really telling the truth, it really might rain. But what's the other side? There's more truth than that, right? There's more truth to it than that. It really might not rain. And so I don't know how to look into the future and say that. And so what about if I really serve a God who's in control of human events and it might rain or it might not rain? I might as well believe it might not rain and then trust him for the outcome. Well, the problem with trusting him with the outcome is I might be wrong. You know, I might be trusting him to actually answer my prayer. Give me some more money so that I can live past next month. And what if he doesn't want to? What then? What do you do? Go to plan B. Ask him to take care of you. And so because the real truth is many, many people have prayed in this world and gone broke. Many people have prayed in the world and their child died. Many people have prayed, and they died. So, where am I going to get the power then to keep fear from scaring me to death? Yes, ma'am. Thank you. There are a lot of promises in the Bible to support that idea. Like one of them is you won't ever be given more than you can stand. That's a big one. That's right. You know, David actually said it was good that I was afflicted. I can honestly tell you that it has been immensely good that I've been afflicted. I've learned lessons at 51 years old that I didn't learn up till now. Things like, do I really believe God, or do I believe him when he does what I want him to do? Do I believe in him? Wonderful lessons. And so I can't say that I feel terrible. I can't say that I'm scared to death. I'm just most grateful at this moment. And I think that's it. If I can be grateful today, then I'm okay. But I wanted to. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
You know, I saw
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to review this process of fear. Is that showing up? Oh, yes. It's kind of a little old game I learned. It's called What's the Risk? Oh, come on now. That won't work. And then let's just take any kind of little old fear that we have. I'm scared of going broke. All right, and I don't know why exactly. Maybe it's because I felt insignificant growing up, or it might be a jillion different things. Part of it has to do, I feel like I'm responsible for certain people in the world and not necessarily just me. I feel like if it was just me, then I wouldn't care if I was broke. But I don't know all the insides and outs of all that, but I'm scared of going broke. All right. So let's ask myself then, what's the risk if I go broke? You might not be scared of going broke, so you don't know. But if you are, or if you know anybody who is, tell me, what's the risk of going broke? Lose everything if you're going broke. Let's see. If you go broke, man, what I got to do is keep my hand off of this screen because it writes on it, I think, if I slide my hand on it. So anyway, go broke. All right. Pardon me? Oh, okay. So if I lose everything, what's the risk of me losing everything? Makes me liable for stuff. I owe things. Okay. Well, the risk. Okay. Well, debt is one risk. All right. So what's the risk if I'm in debt? That shame's a big old deal, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So the risk of paying the debt for me, I mean, risk of having a debt for me is I'd renege on the debt. I wouldn't pay it. And so can't pay it. And so if I say, okay, well, what's the risk if I can't pay my debts? Well, I might get sued. All right, what's the risk if I get sued? Well, I could lose everything. Back to number one. All right, and so what if I lose everything? What's the risk? And if I change my lifestyle, it must be it's going to go down if I'm scared of it, right? So let's see, lifestyle goes down. So what's the risk if my lifestyle goes down? Family suffers, and what's the risk if my family suffers? Hurt their future? Hurt future? And what's the risk if I hurt my family's future? For me, it means I'm a failure. If you get down to it, you know, it's my fault. My fault. And so if I erase all that and go to number 10, so what's the risk if it's my fault? I'm a failure. Whoa, what did I do? All right, if the risk is I'm a failure, then for me, if I'm a failure, then I'm not worth anything. And then what's the risk if I'm not worth anything? Well, if I'm not, pardon me? I'm discouraged. And so the risk, that if I'm not worth anything and I'm discouraged, to me is that I ain't fit to live. I'm not fit to live. And so the risk there is, if I'm not fit to live, somebody ought to kill me. That's where I get to with it. So the risk of going broke is that I die. You get that? That's a terrible way to be, isn't it? Well, I think, guys, that at the bottom of almost all of our fears is destruction or death. If we play that game with ourselves all the way to the end, it almost always leads right there. What's the risk? What's the risk? What's the risk? Eventually it means It's the risk is that I totally lose myself and totally lose my significance, or I get destroyed or I die, and so that I lose. Well, death, I think, is at the bottom of most of our fears after we whittle it down like that. So what's scaring you today? Have you got some real fears that are just gnawing away at your gut? Are you scared of dying? Are you scared of your people dying? What are you going to do about that? I think, yes, ma'am. Thank you. All right. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Well, yes, sir, Elton.
Do you think Job was afraid?
I believe he was. Yeah. I think so. Well, here's where I've gotten with it. If I have to be believing that everything's going to turn out the way I would have it turn out if it was me doing it, then I've got to learn this lesson over and over and over and over, because I'll never get past the fear, because I'm not guaranteed that it will turn out exactly the way I would have it if it was me. So I don't want to ever have to keep on learning this lesson again, to where every new thing that comes up, every time I stick my neck out, every time I try something big, I have to be scared. I don't want to keep doing that. I have to be believing that I don't have to be scared even if it kills me. And I wanted to read you some Bible. And listen to this. Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners. That's Isaiah. Now, a bunch of years later, a rabbi sat down in a synagogue, or he stood in a synagogue, and read the same thing. That was Jesus of Nazareth. He read the same thing, then he sat down and he said, "Today, this has come to pass in your hearing." And what did he read? He read, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners." Now, what kind of captives are they? What kind of prisoner is this? Listen to this. This is an amazing piece of scripture. Hebrews 2 actually tells us why Jesus came. And it says like this, verse 14 of Hebrews 2. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil. And listen to this, verse 15. And free those who all their lives were held in slavery. By what? By fear of death. By fear of death. Fear of death holds us in slavery. And Jesus came to free us up from all that because he killed death. Man, if we can believe that, we can go home today a lot happier if you're unhappy. That's a big deal right there. He freed us up from the slavery of being scared of death. Yes, ma'am. Orwell, that's right. That's right. Good statement. Thank you. Thank you. Do you know why righteous people die? Anyone? Anyone? I read something. Pardon me? I didn't even know you knew that, Dan. I did not know it until this week. Listen to this. The righteous perish, and no one ponders it in his heart. Devout men are taken away, and no one understands. Listen to this. No one understands that the righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. Those who walk uprightly enter into peace, and they find rest as they lie in death. What if that's true? What if it's really true, guys, that the day we die is better than the day we were born? That takes a lot of stuff away, doesn't it? I want to learn how to believe it like that. I don't know how yet exactly, but I sure do want to know. I want to believe it like that. The righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. And what did Paul say about it in 1 Corinthians? And I'm nearly done, and I'm really grateful to you for listening to me. Well, it sounds like I am done, but here's what he said. 1 Corinthians 2, 9, I think it is. No, yeah. No eye has seen, nor ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him. What do you think? Yeah. And Paul said later that, you know, I'd rather just go ahead and die, but I think it's better for you if I stay here. Well, all of those are really, really good things. So I guess, guys, what I'm going to have to do is just praise God today and thank Him for everything and wait on the Lord to see me through everything that I'm going through. So let's pray together.